Bob. It's a download 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. Well, it's time to reload this week's news. 312-981-7200 is the phone number if you'd like to play along. We got biggest story, winners, losers, overreported, underreported. Which story took you down the rabbit hole and which story will be remembered in 5, 10, 15, 20, 50, 500 years from this week?
The snow.
You say the snow?
The snow.
Yes. Ken Davis and Ray Long in studio to help us along tonight. Of course, Ken Davis, the host of Chicago Newsroom, which can be found on CanTV. Good to see you, Ken. Hey. Ray Long, you know what? I owe you one, man. We had cancellations today. Ray Long in the building, the great investigative reporter from the Chicago Tribune comes through.
Thank you.
Great.
I owe you, man.
Always
thank
good.
You.
Always good to be here.
Always great to have you here.
I like it when people owe me.
It's good.
And I'm surprised that because I figured I'd be pushed aside for Tom Skilling, but
I know we don't think we didn't think about it. He's busy.
I was surprised that he lives here, just next door.
Right.
I didn't know that. Yeah.
All right, so let's get right into it. I think snow probably will show up a lot in this conversation, but let's get to your biggest stories of the week. Why don't we start with you, Ray? Biggest story of the week for you.
Well, I just got to give a round of applause to my colleagues at the Tribune who pushed out a great story about how J.B. Pritzker was caught on tape talking about the chances of African Americans and how he described their chances with Rod Blagojevich on an FBI tape back in 2008 while they were looking for somebody to replace. Right. Barack Obama, who had just won the presidency, that opened up his U.S. Senate seat. And so there were a lot of crude statements made about how Blagojevich and
whenever
Pritzker,
you use the phrase the African-American thing, it never goes. That's not a good phrase. But I mean, this is classic horse trading. This is what people don't like about American politics as we know it. And J.B. Pritzker's on tape with the one guy who went to jail for it. I mean, Ken, this is not good for J.B. Pritzker.
It's not. It's absolutely not. And I'm about to say something that could sound controversial, so I want to make it absolutely clear that I agree with all of this. But I do also resonate a little bit with this thing about, you know, you've probably had a conversation with your bosses about other things at the station that you've said, you know, that really is like the least offensive. Put that on, you know, whatever. That if I played the tape of that a few years from now, you'd be just devastated.
10 years from now, right.
Now, of course, this has all the additional stuff of it being about serious politics and about race and everything.
And an FBI wiretap.
It's not a
home recording, right?
These are the kinds of things when you put Blagojevich Pritzker FBI tape on a Twitter feed, people start to clip.
But I guess we should just say that anybody, even back then, you should have known better if you're talking to Blagojevich. I mean, he was already hot even then.
Yeah.
Ray, this is a story that when you go down the line and then, you know, this week you've seen Pritzker in a press conference, you know, on the flanked by African-American leaders like Jesse White, who was referenced in the tape. Pastors, I think it was last night, they got together and said, what are we going to do about this? And this story, which really they tried to tamp down right away with all the African-American leaders in politics coming out supporting J.B. Pritzker, seems to be still around and getting big.
Oh, yeah, he's still on an apology tour here. And I believe that his opponents are gaining from that, too. Like Daniel Biss, the state senator, has been putting out all these kind of feel-good introduction commercials, and people are relating to him on his pitch that he's the middle-class candidate for governor versus the billionaires. And J.B. Pritzker has spent $49 billion on his campaign, and he's leading the pack. And you know, when you spend that kind of money on it, you should be leading the pack, right?
I've been wondering about whether these African-American leaders, like city council people and all that, whether they have some polling of some kind or something that the rest of us aren't seeing, that they're just not willing to give up this train. They're not willing to get off this train.
Yeah.
And it's painful and all that. But when you see people who are, you know, pretty smart about politics and even Jesse White standing next to him at the podium, there's something going on here. And what seems to be going on for me is that they've made the calculation that this guy can beat Rauner, and they're gonna swallow it. And
both of you guys have been on this program, and we've talked about how it was a head scratcher that, I mean, early as last summer, we're talking Mike Madigan and company coming forward saying J.B. Pritzker is our guy.
Yeah.
And before the even process of the election and the primary began, and we talked about, hey, you know, we kind of saw this in the 2016 election with Hillary Clinton. They said, this is our candidate. Yeah. And when Bernie Sanders came on, they said, too bad. We'll find a way not to have him win. Are the same kind of thing here, as more and more dirt piles up on J.B. Pritzker, and every single mainstream Democrat in office, from the U.S. Senate to the mayor of Chicago, is behind J.B. Pritzker. Not a great look if this candidate continues. I mean, if there's more tape on him and there's more stuff that he steps in.
Yeah, one of the things that you think of here is that Hillary Clinton had baggage. Everybody piled on the bandwagon, but she still had a lot of baggage. And she had trouble overcoming that. And, you know, we saw how that came out in the end. So the question is whether Pritzker will be piling on more and more baggage along the way here, and he's coming under attack more and more too, for not only his phrases that he used in this conversation with Blagojevich, but it is coming to a head now, where we're coming into the last few weeks. A lot of people are trying to figure out how they can score political points. Chris Kennedy is out there swinging. Daniel Biss is out there swinging. And their target is J.B. Pritzker.
And, you know, Ken, I mentioned this before. Marilyn Katz was on this program not too long ago, and she said, you don't win the gubernatorial nomination on the Democratic ticket without the black vote in Chicago.
You know, I heard that, and that obviously is conventional wisdom too, but do you win the Democratic race with someone like Biss, even if black people in Chicago voted for him, which I think is a stretch? How does he play downstate?
Yeah, right.
And so that's why on my winners this week, I've got Bruce Rauner, because I think this is like a twofer for him. Getting JB really muddied up, and then the ad, you know, the Jeannie Ives ad.
Well,
which makes him look good by comparison.
We'll get into that, because I mean, both of those names, Rauner and Ives, are going to show up in all of our lists tonight.
Consider the possibility of Bruce Rauner getting reelected. That's what I'm saying.
Yeah, that's interesting. And there's a lot that goes into, of course, you know, what still has to happen. And you know, I've had panelists on as well, our friend Mario, who's on the show, he talked about the triangle, the trifecta of who's on African-American walls, pictures on the walls, and one of them is John F. Kennedy. Mm-hmm. And the Kennedy name has a very strong pull in an older African-American base. I mean, that's just that they've always been there for the Kennedy family. So there still is something there with Chris Kennedy and the black community.
Yeah, I think you're definitely right about that. One of the things that has struck me, though, I have talked to some younger people, including African-American people, who said, you know, I heard that Chris Kennedy's dad was really big on civil rights. And I'm like, wow, yes, that's true.
Yeah.
And
So
the resonance is still there, unquestionably, but there may be a diminishing buzz.
I got one quick thing I'd like to bring up about this, and it's been circulating a little bit today, and it's perfect to have you here, Ray, because this is a Tribune story.
Mm-hmm.
Tribune broke this story. Mm-hmm. Tribune had this tape.
Mm-hmm.
Tribune's had this tape for some time, apparently, right?
I would assume they're the ones.
I mean, I know that the question was asked of Bruce Dole today. Is this just some kind of Tribune plot to try to trip up? You know, to trip up.
every time the Tribune has an investigation, that comes up, because the idea being that they support more conservative candidates.
Right. Well, I mean, but if they've had this tape, and I don't know, I'm not accusing anybody of anything, but if they've had this tape all the way since Blagojevich, and they elected to run it like a couple of weeks before the election instead of at the time that he first showed up on the scene, that's a political act.
Yeah, I don't know about that.
Well, I literally don't know how long they've had it.
And I'm not accusing
I do know
them of
that.
I'm just
saying. Yeah.
Come on, Ray.
And I do know that that Jeff Cohen and Rick Pearson are veteran reporters with a lot of sources.
Much respected people.
Yeah, you can ask Jeff next time he comes.
And
out.
So the other thing is that we're not out there to twist things here, right? One of the things that it is obvious from the initial story is that it was inserted into a piece about how African Americans are being courted by all the candidates too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
And since Ray Long, Ken Davis in studio tonight, we're reloading the news. We just got through one story there. It's going to be a long night.
It's going to be a long night. Wow.
Strap in.
You're here till 11.
We're here. We're reloading the news, 312-981-7200. Stay with us. It's a download 720 WGN, 312-981-7200 is the phone number. I'm Justin Kaufman with Ray Long and Ken Davis. We are reloading this week's news as we continue. Obviously, we're going to get to a lot tonight, and we're kind of jumping around here. But as Ken Davis mentioned, he had Bruce Rauner as a winner. I had in my biggest story, I thought Jeannie Ives and the fallout from the commercial, which really happened, I believe it was last Friday, was the beginning of it, and it was over the weekend. But I thought that that was a big story for Jeannie Ives because you have seen a tremendous arc in 1 week for a candidate who, at the beginning of last week, she wiped the floor with the governor at a Chicago Tribune editorial board, the only time they're going to be together.
Right.
Everyone is like, what a fresh voice.
Right.
And then here came this commercial at the end that, you know, at best was personified the issues that conservatives in the state are interested in. At worst was offensive, harmful, hurtful, and hateful.
Homophobic.
I mean,
what a fresh, hateful voice.
I mean, it really, for a lot of voters who may have just been introduced to Jeannie Ives, what a swing. But she's putting ads on the and she's getting more money, and she starts her ads, which I think is really interesting, where she goes, now that I have your attention.
Right.
And the point being, is it possible that this is just all strategy? She knew what she was doing in the sense that she knew she had a controversial ad, but it was going to get people's attention, and it's working.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think that that's one way to do it for sure. And it certainly has sparked outrage, and it certainly has gotten her more attention. However, it really has caused a lot of people to think twice when they were thinking that they might look at her as a true alternative rather than just a kind of fringe candidate who nobody had heard of. She is actually a smart state lawmaker who can really do well on the debate floor, et cetera, in Springfield. I've heard her many times. However, you're going to question her ideology, and she doubled down on that ad, too, when she was challenged on it, the one that has become viewed as very offensive
but
by
many
quarters.
She's definitely reading from the Trumpian playbook here. I mean, that's the way you do it. You get outrageous, and you just don't worry about the consequences, because people just kind of, a percentage of the audience is going to love that you're doing this. They're going to like you for it.
Now, I've heard many say that you're going to get a more hardcore voter in both primaries, meaning a liberal Democrat and a more conservative Republican when they get to the primary, and that hurts the moderates or the mainstream candidates. This is where the more fringe candidates can shine. Does Jeannie Ives, she obviously, she has, that's good for her. But, I mean, do you see her challenging Bruce Rauner in a primary in 40 days from now?
I think that it's still open. You know, I think it's Rauner's to lose. I think there's no doubt that it's Rauner's race to lose. However, Jeannie Ives has some money now, and she has some attention now, as you just pointed out. And she is a smart person who can show how she beat up a Rauner in that editorial board debate just a few days ago.
I think it's time to give up on this notion that there are centrists left in America. I think they're gone. I just don't think they exist. I don't feel like one anymore. I've lived my whole life as a centrist. It's like, I like what you have to say. I like what you have to say. I'm not like that anymore. You know, it's like I've chosen sides on almost every issue because we're kind of forced to. And I think she understands that, and I think she's playing on that. And I'm not really saying that Rauner is that much of a centrist, but I mean, she's making him look like
one.
No,
but he ran. I mean, he wasn't a centrist. No, I mean, he ran in his own way as a fringe candidate and won 4 years ago. I guess the question I have is, okay, let's play hypotheticals. If Jeannie Ives does pull the upset and takes out an incumbent in the primary, is she going to run into trouble for the same voters that she mocked in these ads? Are those voters going to be now in the general, not looking to, like, I'm talking about moderate Western suburban voters who don't necessarily want to be that in that kind of space that she can't court now?
Well, here's a scenario for you. What if Biss pulls it out?
Right.
And it's Biss versus her.
Right. Huh? It's an ideological warfare.
Yeah,
there.
I mean, then you really have to choose sides.
And that is not beyond the possible, right?
It may not be likely. It doesn't seem to be anymore.
But the other thing that strikes me here, and maybe you guys have heard it, but when Trump was out there originally, people would be saying, you'd hear people saying, hey, he just tells it like it is. And have you heard that kind of thing from Jeannie Ives? Because that seems to be the angle that she's going for.
And also, I would say that I heard many during the 2016 campaign say, laugh off that he won the Republican nomination.
Right.
They laughed off saying, he's not going to win the general. Who's going to vote for him in the general? No way he said such bad things.
That?
But as we saw in history, and that could play in the I wonder... when you have those kind of ads, and I don't know, there's something about it that you don't expect your leaders to, at the beginning of their campaign, be divisive in the way that they are already. And I know that they're personifying issues, and that's the idea of this commercial, but it really feels, and the tone is, these voters, we don't like these types of Illinoisans. And when you're running for governor of Illinois, that means you have to represent everybody. Maybe that goes to your point, Ken, that we're no longer looking for our leaders to represent everyone. They represent who voted for them to get here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and we're seeing more of that. I don't know. I just really kind of feel like we're in our camps now. And Illinois has always been kind of a weird bellwether of this stuff.
I will say this, and we'll wrap and we'll go to the news here, but I will say, if it was Ives and Biss, the one thing everyone will say, how interesting that these two, but it would be two people from the Illinois state legislature.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The most maligned,
most maligned, but they may be best equipped
issues. It felt like even 4 years ago that we were looking for outside voices that weren't in the Illinois legislature, wasn't attracted to Cullerton or Madigan, or wasn't aligned with just a party vote. But maybe you're right. Maybe there's a swing here that's happening.
True, but they're not really the type who are going to be walking arm in arm with Mike Madigan.
Yeah, how could Governor Biss deal with Mike Madigan? That would be a real interesting thing to watch, wouldn't it?
Or Governor Ives.
Yeah, Governor, even more with Governor Ives. But yeah.
Ken Davis, Ray Long, my guests. We're reloading this week's news. We'll take a quick break to get tonight's news. And we come back, we'll continue with winners and losers. Stay with us. Yeah. Thank you, Rob. It's Download 720 WGN. I'm Justin Coppin, Ray Long, investigative reporter over at the Chicago Tribune. Ken Davis, the host of Chicago Newsroom on CAN TV, both with us tonight. 312-981-7200 is the phone number.
I'm just here to do snow bulletins.
And then and for the rest of the night, snow. No, we're past the snow. As I said, you could already see on Michigan Avenue, which is really great, the piles of snow, because they've done such a good job of, I mean, you wouldn't even know them beside just the piles. But it's starting to get gray on the edges.
But there is supposed to be an inch or two tomorrow, better go out and buy some milk.
Yeah, well, can I just say something? Are we turning into Little Rock, Arkansas? I mean, really, when you go down there and there's a couple inches of snow, a good Illinoisan can drive around on all those roads, and it's great because there's no traffic.
My wife
they
went
shut
to
it down.
Whole Foods last night, probably around 5:30. And she said the line, everyone was open. The line to get in and out of the parking lot was bumper to bumper. Mm-hmm. And there was all the shelves were empty, as if Hurricane Ken Davis was coming through town.
Yeah. Well, you know, there's snow coming to Chicago.
I know, right? Well, there you go.
All those people out there, they're waving. They're not scared.
We're passing.
Yeah,
okay,
that's right. You're good winner people.
Let's get to the winners and losers. And we all had on our list this week Nancy Pelosi. She showed up in the winner category. Interesting, because nothing really happened, because at the end of the day, we're not talking about a government shutdown. A government shutdown that did happen. It's surprising. I mean, we almost can put this in the overreported category, because this is a story that just 2 weeks ago was the biggest story. It shut everything down. The government shut down. This one's like, we're doing it.
Well, if I could address this, it's interesting to me because that whole 8-hour show was to talk about DACA, right? Was to show how the Democrats are on the side of these horribly oppressed people who ICE is picking up in the most awful places and all that stuff. Well, they came up with a deal. And the deal is signed and sealed and delivered. I don't know if Trump signed it yet or whatever, but there is not a dot and tittle in that agreement about DACA.
It's making a transition because I don't think there are any more winners this week. Going to the losers, you wonder about the Democrats being losers because they were in the loser category when they tried to force a government shutdown 2-3 weeks ago and then to walk away. And I get it because Chuck Schumer will tell you, well, we saved a ton of budget items. There's no cuts.
Right.
Obviously, with the tax cuts, there were worries that they were going to be making up that money by cutting social services and other things. That didn't happen this time around.
It got CHIP.
They did get something that they may not have thought they were going to get, but you're right, DACA and immigration shelved.
So Slate is out tonight with an analysis. I'm sorry, it's Atlantic is out with an analysis of this tonight that's very interesting that they really appear to have just simply made the decision that they were not going to get this. And so they're going to keep their powder dry and use it, actually turn it to their advantage. That's what they're thinking, that they're going to be able now for the next, 8 months to say, we couldn't get DACA out of those Republicans because they wouldn't give it to us. You've got to vote for us. So that's the idea, is that they can sell 2018 to turn the House and the Senate. Item.
And Ray, I guess you put it in the loser category, but ICE falls into the loser category just through a bad publicity week. There were a lot of situations and there was the one story that went viral. And again, I feel like being somewhat media literate, I always question whether or not I'm getting the entire story from the stuff that shows up in my Facebook feed or otherwise. But the story of this guy just sent his kids off to school as young kids and ICE shows up and arrests him. Other stories that they're just terrible, sending the guy back to Jordan. I mean, there's so many stories that are popping up right now of ICE doing inhumane style things when trying to enforce it.
Yeah, there's just weird stuff happening. And I just, before I came down here into the studio, I pulled off three stories that ran in the Tribune this week, over the last week here, and it includes one guy who is a winner and a loser himself. You know, he walks into traffic court, and then he's going to deal with a traffic ticket, he thinks, and he ends up with a whole bunch of problems here because he's in Cook County's Skokie branch, and then ICE shows up and approaches him and arrests him, and they're saying they're going to ship him off to a holding facility in Wisconsin. There was such an uproar that, he was let go. But that is one guy who was for a short time a real loser, but now he's a winner. And then we've got others here, like Bruce Rauner weighed in on this whole story about Miguel Perez and whether he could be just for a background here. He's an Army veteran. He's a green card holder, and he's got a felony drug conviction. And he was hoping that a Rauner pardon could maybe help his case to try to not get thrown out of the country. But Rauner dissed him and said no. And so his whole saga, he's in kind of a holding pattern here too now. And that's one. But a third story is even more remarkable here. And it just moved today. And it's about two fellas who had been wrongly convicted of murder. Gabriel Solach and Arturo Reyes, they suddenly found themselves in a new fight for their freedom because once they heard about their convictions being overturned, they were handed over to ICE again. So they're now trying to battle ICE. And so you just, everywhere you're turning, you're hearing these kind of...
Yeah, it's just bad publicity for ICE.
And it's more than bad publicity, though. I think it's like, holy smoke, is this what the founders wanted?
Is this what we've come to?
And obviously in the election year, we're talking more about it. You saw it in Jeannie Ives' piece about sanctuary states. And the one thing about the state of Illinois, both at the state level but also at the city of Chicago level, is there is this idea that, listen, we're not ICE. We have a job to do. We have our own stuff. ICE is capable of doing their own thing.
Yeah, yeah.
That's essentially what it means, right? The concept of sanctuary state is we're not going to be an arm of ICE. That's your job. If they show up in our custody, we will treat them like they're criminals or you know, or whatever they're in for, but we're not going to be doing extra immigration stuff on top of it. And, you know, I thinking about it more, I'm like, yeah, when you talk about these detention facilities, there's one in McHenry, there's one out in, like you said, Wisconsin. There's a lot of ICE is happening in the Illinois area already.
Right.
It's interesting to think that people automatically see in the election time that sanctuary state means there's nothing happening when it comes to immigration.
Yeah, yeah, that's true.
But there absolutely is, right. Especially in the state of Illinois.
And you hear about kind of the extreme stories. The guy who's been in the states for 30 years and then he's hauled off, you know, while his kids watch.
Yeah, right.
Watching. But there are all these lesser ones that are not as extreme, but still very painful to the people who are going through it.
And I don't know. I mean, there's something kind of really unsettling about the idea that we're creating these kind of detention camps. And I mean, it takes me back to a darker time in our history. And I just don't understand when 87% of the American public or whatever it is saying, leave them alone. Let them, you know, let these people live their lives that they've created in the United States. They largely are not hurting anybody. Despite what the president tells you, they're not running around killing people.
Well, it's obviously, I mean, talk about a political issue and one that consistently shows up in debates and other things with candidates. But you're right, rarely ever looks at exactly how it's playing out in real life. I mean, it gets almost talking points are reverberated around this country from whatever the last politician to talk about it said on Twitter. All right, let's talk about the White House. I guess you put them in the loser category. A tough week for them. I mean, they got the bending. They got the spending bill. They got the spending bill, and with that, a lot of military. What Trump wanted, but they had a tremendous scandal when it came to domestic violence. The executive in charge of secretaries, Porter, it came out that he had two different wives that came forward saying that they were abused by him, and
one after the other. It should be pointed out, the wives.
One after the other. But the big story here is that the press seems to tell us that the White House knew about this, that this was something they knew and they covered up or they didn't want to deal with it. And it shows this again, this White House that may be short on principles when it comes to who they're hiring and giving clearance to do the work of the government.
Well, it's pretty clear that the chief of staff must have known this. I mean, it's very difficult to imagine this guy who is a control freak, a Marine brought in because of his mastery of everything. He didn't know about this, so, you know, that's why now tonight he's talking about resigning.
Yeah,
too.
And a lot of people are in trouble. It's kind of amazing, but last 6 months of what's been happening in the White House and all the calls for resignations and changes and everything being diffused and pushed away, that this would be the one that would get the most resignations out of the White House. But if I'm to understand the story, if the chief of staff comes in to clean up shop and he's told about what's happening and feels that he can figure out how to keep this person that he wants to keep because of whatever their skill is, what's he supposed to do? I mean, is the goal at that point for all of us to say that person should be dismissed when his background check comes into the chief of staff? Should he say, oh, we got a problem, he's got to go? I mean, is that how it should be?
Well, that's a great question. I mean, you can almost look at Illinois' governors through that thing. Take George Ryan, for example. Did a lot of great things, but he had this other side that sent him to prison, too. So these are the kinds of things that they probably should have backgrounded out in the beginning. Porter didn't even have security clearance, at least for a while, if not all the way even now.
Which tells us that they probably knew
because someone would have called and said, why aren't you giving us the clearance on this guy?
Right,
well, there's this little problem, sir.
Right, right.
Well, that's one story that obviously brought a lot of attention, negative attention to the White House. But then you keep going. I mean, and the story that came out tonight is that the president is not releasing the Democrat memo on Russia. This is the one, of course, that is the counterpart to the Nunes memo that came out last week. It has to go to the president to be cleared. The council bounced it back to the House saying, too much sensitive information in this. We're not going to let this. We care about intelligence, and there's too much in
all
this.
All of a sudden, we're going to start caring about this.
I mean, is this something that you'll see a backlash? I mean, it just happened tonight. Do you think the American people will say, wait a second, I call foul?
No, I don't think you're going to hear anything about it. I think it's going to be another one of those stories just going to disappear into the noise. You know, there's just so much going on. I don't think that 98% of the American people, if you sat them down and tried to focus group them and ask them exactly who all these people are and what it is that they're all doing,
included.
They would just say they're just a bunch of, depending on their which gang they're in, they'd say, they're just a bunch of crooks and they're just doing a bunch of really bad things. I hate all of them.
Or they're being set up.
Or they're being set up by the Democrats or something like that. I don't think really. I mean, another guy quit tonight. You know, the news never stops.
Right. Speechwriter David Sorensen resigned.
Yeah.
And it was after a report that said his former wife claimed he was violent. I'm reading this from The Hill right now. Mm-hmm. I just pulled it off right before I came down. And they said, or she said, he was emotionally abusive, et cetera. And then the White House said, before we were contacted by the media, we learned last night that there were allegations. We immediately confronted the staffer. He denied the allegations, and he resigned today. I mean, and then that's for them. That's end of story, hopefully, but
because
for them.
Because of your time slot, you don't get a chance to watch Rachel Maddow very often.
No.
But I do. And, of course, I always have you on in the background, too.
Thank you, Ken. Yeah. I appreciate that.
But one of the hallmarks of her show is she bounces up and down in her chair and says, the news just never stops. There's just something always exciting happening. It used to be. Remember when it used to be Friday night? Nothing would happen?
Yeah, Friday night seems to be the jam now.
Yeah. Oh, man.
I think we're on to something. Yeah. Ken Davis and Ray Long in studio tonight. 312-981-7200. We will go to overreported and underreported stories coming up. Stay with us. 312 brings up that we didn't talk about Rachel Brand stepping down, third in command at the Justice Department. I mean, this has been a week. We're reloading this week's news. 312-981-7200. Ken Davis, Ray Long. This has been a week that's been tough for the White House. I mean, and the story of Porter and domestic violence is one that I think our whole society kind of has to look at, not unlike the Me Too movement where you said, okay, this has happened in the past. This is something that this guy was accused of. The allegations, if founded, what is the repercussions? I mean, this guy shouldn't be working in the White House. I think we agree that if you have that kind of terrible track record, maybe a White House government job is not in your future.
Yeah, and it just, for the Trump administration, it just underscores kind of that image that they have of you know, we don't care, we're kind of thuggery, old Neanderthalish, and therefore a guy like this, well, you know, we can let him go through. But I do think we've reached a point now where we don't just have to think better, but we have to be better.
You know, I will say this is something that I was thinking about, that the problem right now with the Trump administration being the one that, whether it's this issue or the issue with Trump having 19 plus accusers of sexual misconduct, is you get into the game of, is the Trump administration essentially politicizing these things? Are the people that are complaining about these things snowflakes? Is he politicizing domestic violence? I would have asked that. I would have put that up more on Wednesday to see on Friday that John Kelly is saying he will resign, that they are taking steps to, like I said, the resignation of the speechwriter, but also understanding how serious these allegations are. I roll that back. That's something I might have said on Wednesday, but it seems to me that they have been at least convinced for the time being that this is not a political issue.
Right, that they got to at least do the background check and do what's right. And what's right may not be what you used to sit back and have a couple of beers and laugh about. And I'm not saying I did that, but I'm saying that's kind of the atmosphere this kind of party room atmosphere that they have there.
Yeah.
No, I mean, it's an interesting point.
It's a very interesting point, but I'm not willing to excuse it that easily. I mean, Trump is a guy who brings into the White House his own baggage of, as you said, these very same kinds of accusations. Just because they say, nah, I didn't do it, that's not good enough for me. And if I were chief of staff, I'd like to think that if I were chief of staff and I had this guy working for me and he still doesn't have his clearance, I'd want to know why.
Exactly.
And if I found out why, I would say, you know, there's only about, you know, 23, 24, 28 jobs here in the West Wing.
Right.
And you know what?
Maybe
we can do better.
We can do better.
We can find someone who didn't beat up his first two wives.
First two, right. But, I mean, there's something to be said that there are jobs in our society, especially when you talk about the White House, the leaders of the free world, that they should be clean.
And we should maybe ask, what is Hope Hicks thinking?
I remember when the Pope, not this one, but the one before, had the Hitler Youth. Yeah, Benedict. He was in Hitler Youth. It came out.
Mm.
I was like, you can do anything you want in the world. You just can't be Pope, right? You're in Hitler Youth. And maybe you're forced into it, whatever it is. But there's a lot of things you could do.
At some point, there are just standards.
Yes. I know for a fact. I will tell you guys right now. I can't run for Congress, right? I know that. Like, I know in my life, the minute I stepped on stage and started doing improv and comedy and sketch, and people started taking pictures, said and done things that I knew at that point. I said, well, I'm not going to be clean enough to be a congressman.
Making fun of Mayor Daley, just that alone. Yeah,
that is out the window now. Well, that's out the window.
Look at Al Franken, right?
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
Ray Long, Ken Davis, we are breaking down this week's news. All right, here's what we'll do.
We're breaking it down.
We're breaking it down, right? Overreported and underreported. I think that's where we're going to find our conversations about snow. Maybe the Olympics. And we have to talk about media. Media played a big week for media stories, whether it was Block Club Chicago, which is the new DNA Info project, or people from the DNA Info, Sun Times, the Tribune, all in the headlines this week.
Big week for snow, too.
Yeah, and big snow. Week. And snow. And snow. Ken
is
Davis.
It snowing now?
Ray Long
it's
in studio.
Can I say it? The 50,000-watt snowplow. Can I say it?
Yes, you can say it at the 9 o'clock.
Oh, man.
All right, Ken, here's your big moment. You ready?
Really?
Yeah, here you go.
You're going to let me do
here
this?
Yeah, yep, take it. Do it.
This is your 50,000-watt snowplow. 720 WGN Chicago, the radio home of millions throughout Mid-America. The emergency closing center is open at WGNradio.com.
Yeah.
I almost wanted you to do it again, man. Yeah, that is so good. Wow.
I always wanted to do a station break.
I'm
going to
do a chapter. That is coming off the logger.
14 years old, I wanted to do that.
Thank you, Rob. It's Download 720 WGN. Ray Long and Ken Davis in studio 312.
Can I just say this is the biggest night since I was guesting DJ on WLS in 1964.
Oh, man. Can he do it again? I'd really like to hear it again. Or at least save the tape.
You added some stuff to it, too.
Oh, yeah. It was an ad lib.
I got to do this. Remember when the 50th anniversary of the Picasso?
Yeah.
I was a kid, I was like 14 years old or something. I had taken the L down to see this because I thought this was a big civic thing. So I'm just standing out there and I see it happen and I think, wow, Wally would really like to hear about this. So I go over to a payphone. There was a payphone in the plaza and I called the number and I got through. And it's like one of the most amazing things in my life. And I'm on the radio with Wally Phillips and he's saying, wow. So what's going on over there? Well, Wally, they just pulled the little cord in the little blue thing, but it's there. I can't understand it. It's kind of a weird looking thing, Wally. That's my story. Sorry.
And now you get to do the tags.
You're moving up, baby.
It took you a couple years, but you got this part too. All right. So let's keep going here. Let's do overreported. I think we all agree, and we kind of talked about it a little earlier, the snow. I don't know. I mean, obviously the snow is important, especially in some of the outlying areas of the listenership of WGN. You're talking about a foot of snow. It's a pain in the butt. But when we talk about overreported, I mean, this story popped up Tuesday, Wednesday, and we've been talking about this snowstorm for 4 days.
Yeah.
With the last yesterday being, I mean, it's amazing to me how I grew up in a Chicago area where schools didn't close that easily. I mean, CPS closed. They rarely closed. Yeah. I mean, remember when it was cold, a polar vortex a couple years ago? There was like they felt like they convened a council where they're like, I don't know. There was like a split vote. You know, is it going to happen? And temperatures were like negative 20.
When you wrote to us and said, you know, are you sure you're going to be able to make it in the snow? I was going to write back to you, snark back and say, in 1967, the snow in 1967, I had to walk home from high school and that was 3.5 miles in it. I I can handle this.
Yeah, that, and you said earlier, Ray, this is what are we Little Rock?
Yeah, are we Little Rock?
That is my I mean, really, I've been down there when it snows 2 inches, and literally the town shuts down. Yeah. People stay all night in the motels there. The staff in the motels will stay.
Yeah, it's, we get a little Second City complex. Yeah. They go crazy in New York. And
oh, I
got to
get batteries on the way home. I keep forgetting.
Yeah, right.
The other, I don't think it's an overreported story. The one I'll put on there, I would say, and I know that people get mad at me with this, but the Olympics. I get to a certain
overreported,
point.
Overreported,
huh? I just feel in the last 2 days, it's just been too much. And yeah. Watching it last night, and I watched it because I'm into it. I wanted to watch it. The amount of hype for the American athletes, which is obviously it's American broadcast and you're watching it, but with the John Tesh like pieces and whatever, and then the actual get to the ice when it's the prelims. I mean, we're not even to the gold yet. Oh. I mean, they spent so much time on these athletes, and there was one figure skater on the male side of Chen. And they did a piece last night. They showed everything. And it was a tearjerker where you're just like, oh, this kid came up for it. And then he sucked. Oh. Like he fell three times. And the announcer was hilarious because the announcer was like, that is awful. Awful. Yeah, I've never seen it so bad. And I was just like, oh, my gosh. This is what it's going to be like for the next couple of weeks. Let's move to underreported stories. Okay, why don't we get into – I mean, you both have very specific stories that haven't really been reported. The Pennsylvania Miami.
Gerrymandering. Yes. Very well, this is one of those things that everybody's going to go, wait, we're going to talk about gerrymandering.
Yeah.
Right. Well, what we're talking about here is how they redrawed the congressional maps. And in particular, there was a Pennsylvania court that ruled that the legislative boundaries are just so wildly tilted there in Pennsylvania that it just doesn't make sense. The court even came out with an opinion that said, you know, clearly, plainly, palpably violating the state's constitution. So what was happening there, for example, in 2012, Democrats won 51% of the statewide popular vote in U.S. House races in votes for those elections. But only 5 out of 18 were Democrats elected there. That's because they draw the lines so well and so specifically with computers. They can really decide who is going to be representing whom rather than the voters picking their elected congressman. So that one is going to have some resonance.
Yeah,
and
that's
I
great.
Think that one is
and
underreported.
I saw, too, a story that the GOP there in Pennsylvania are just kind of – They're doing it anyway. There's been push from the court saying you can't do it, and they're like, nah, yeah, we'll do it anyway.
Yeah, we'll take it anyway. Yeah, so
which sounds political, but that's what you do. That's 2018 politics, right?
The people in charge will get the ones will stay in charge.
Least offensive.
Yeah. What do you got for underreported?
Well, you know, since we're kind of serious here, I wanted to give a shout out to the Chicago Reporter, which is one of my favorite underreported reporting operations. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. They did a great story this last edition about. Recruiting African Americans for Chicago Police Department. It's a big, big deal, as we all know. Everybody says that, you know, I think almost everybody agrees that we would have fewer problems if our police department reflected the neighborhoods they're policing. Kevin Stark and Darnell Little did a story about the Brown Farmer Media Group that they hired in 2016 to help with recruitment. And they went back and they looked at recruiting for the last 10 or 15 years. And the one, the most recent year they have data on is 2013. 4,325 African Americans applied that year for the police department. Only 1,050 did not show up for the preliminary exam. 813 of the ones that did failed. And after that, there was a huge drop-off of people who didn't pass the physical exam, who had criminal records, who had a record of drug use, or just the inability to wait around 2 years for the job. So what they're saying is it's not just recruitment, but it's also you need to do retaining right. of these folks during
and
the
what,
process.
What do you have to do that? I mean, does it change the rules in which people can
operate?
Well,
they're talking about how, for example, there are kind of fraternal groups, you know, broken down by ethnicity. There are Latin groups and there are Irish groups and all that kind of thing who kind of hold your hand during the process, and that has never evolved in the African-American community, and it would be interesting if that something like that happened. It's just a great read. It's worth a look.
Huh. 312-981-7200. Mary's got a good one here. The story might be considered slightly underreported. It's the homeless couple that's suing the city of Chicago for repeatedly being forced to move and having their possessions seized and thrown away. I was surprised and pleased to see that some news outlets cover the story. I hope to see more like this, especially in the winter. Yeah, that story, I mean, that's one that has been going on with the city and their continuing push for, you know, cleaning out some of the areas and the homeless population. And do the belongings of the homeless, do they get to keep their belongings, or are they, because they're on public property, are they garbage? I mean, can they be hauled away?
Mark Brown has done so much good reporting on that. And there's this new thing now with the name just escaped me, but the SRO that's being cleared out up
In Uptown?
Uptown, yeah. It's just happening all the time. And this one company called Pads seems to be involved in so many of these where they're just taking these places and turning them and flipping them into condos. And, you know, they can make a lot more money on a building than they can if it's running as an SRO.
Wasn't Pads the name? I mean, because wasn't that the name? I remember that when I was a kid that my parents would go and do, like, soup kitchens. It was called Pads, but it was a different. I think it was a different. But that's my point.
Yeah, they had a different ideology.
Co-opted the acronyms or whatever. All right, in studio tonight, Ken Davis, Ray Long. All right, what we'll do is we'll take a quick break here. We'll come back and let's do. We didn't get a chance to talk media stories, and I know we have our own rabbit holes, but that seems to be where we're at. So we'll talk about the rabbit hole that is Chicago media coming up here on The Download. Stay with us. Yeah, see, 773 told me. Flats is the name of the company. Pads is the homeless support organization in the suburbs. That's what. Yeah.
No. We have to correct that. I feel like such a jerk.
No.
That's right.
And Mary says her overreported story is Vice President Mike Pence not acknowledging the sister of Kim Jong Un at the Olympics.
Yeah, that is.
Who cares? All right. I will say this. I've always wanted to do a new segment called Who's Zoomin' Who, and I want to play the Aretha Franklin song, you know, like we were a cool cable show, but I can never get it together. But I feel like the ones, and it's really trying to get at media manipulation. Like, who's really pulling you one? And we talked a little bit about that with the ICE stories. Like, you're not sure what you're getting. I feel the story about the Democrat memo is a Who's Zoomin' Who. We don't know what's in that memo. I could totally see the Democrats putting a lot of stuff in there to purposely force Trump to have to bring it back just for the politics of it, to look that he's not being fair in his thing. Because it truly could be more information that should be in a memo. Maybe they're getting really deep in there and they're doing it on purpose to essentially force his hand. Not unlike, as we said earlier, I mean, it was the abortion bill that Madigan forced on Rauner that caused Jeanne Ives to have a candidacy for this primary. So it's a who's zooming who moment right now in the White House. That's what I think. You know, I don't think it's as pure evil politics as many are pointing out.
The problem is everybody thought he would do this anyway, right?
Yeah, right.
So you don't know what the likely scenario is because everybody thought, well, Trump will probably squash.
I always push back on the granola Democrat. We are the good ones, and we're doing everything right. And Trump is just evil. Like, I'm like, they're doing the same thing, man. They're trying to win in politics. They're good at it. This is the game that they're playing, and I think that they're zooming. If you're asking who's zooming who.
Who's zooming who, Jay?
You need Aretha.
All right. Who's zooming who? It'd be great. A little button. Right. Anyway. Rabbit hole. Let's talk media.
Rabbit hole.
Block Club Chicago is the new project for Seamus Toomey, Jen Sabella, Stephanie Lillet, and a couple more DNA Info alum. Of course, DNA Info closed up shop unexpectedly surprising to the readership. When the millionaire billionaire Ricketts pulled his funding. They're back. They have a subscription series. They want to bring back local, hyper-local reporting. Ken, that's not a bad idea.
Oh, it's a great idea, and I'm just thrilled that they're there, and I just can't wish them enough good luck. I think it's just absolutely wonderful news. You know, we've all been talking about this for decades, right? I mean, this is not a new topic, and I heard you this morning on the radio, in fact, talking about that this model might not be sustainable because, they have raised $125,000 in like one day.
Yeah, but the caveat being exactly what you just said. This is not the first time a hyperlocal site has attempted to try and grab the...
Shall we start naming them? Yeah, right. No, let's not embarrass them. Yeah.
Play the in memoriam. Yeah. Right. Mm-hmm. But there's a lot... I mean, that's really the issue here is I applaud and I enjoy and I love those journalists. I love what they did at DNA Info. But the question is there enough innovation to have moved this along where just in recent memory, many have failed trying to get subscription series for local hyper-local news to get people to pay for their news?
Well, can I throw two points out? First of all, I think that there is a chance that you can get people to pay for hyper-local just because it is nobody else is doing it. I mean,
true.
You know, you think about the big media, think about the Tribune, sometimes even WGN and all the TV stations. They can't cover what's going on in Wicker Park or in Jefferson Park or whatever it is. They just can't do it because it's not of interest to most people. But a web-based operation like DNA was so successful at it right out of the gate. I mean, right from the beginning, it was very, very popular. So you can get some money, some people to give you some money. But there's another hidden thing here that I thought was just absolute genius, which is the Kickstarter campaign. Mm-hmm. Excuse me. They're getting everybody's phone number and they're getting everybody's email. And what they're doing is if you pledge $50, you're getting a subscription for a year, right?
Right.
So you and I both worked in public radio. We know how this gig goes. Yeah. We both have spent more hours than we want to account for being on the air begging for phone numbers, right? But I believe, and I don't know if you would agree with this, the game changer for public radio and probably TV to some extent was when it became possible to just bank a Visa card number and just take it out of their bank every month.
Went from hundreds of dollars, in our case, Ken, thousands of dollars. Right. And you're going, if I could just get one more call millions of dollars.
In my days, the public radio station had like 16,000 subscribers. Now they got close to 100. And the thing that changed was that you just don't notice that 10 or 15 or 20
they
bucks
went,
being
they
taken
went
out
more
of your
to
month.
The model of, yeah, we, oh. it's now a monthly recurring right. payment, or when it's up, we just charge you and you have to tell us not to.
So
that's a way to do it. Yeah.
So here's what's happening, right? You've got I don't know how many, but it sounds like thousands of people have
given
subscribed.
Money,
right? They didn't know they were subscribing. They thought they were just giving money, but they have a subscription, and now all they got to do is go back to these people and say, we'd like to just put you on the rolls and, you know, take this 10 or 15 or 20 bucks a month. So it's possible that they could have a base level of subscription that others don't have. Of course, it's not much and it's not enough, but it's something to build on.
The question is, and is this something to build on? I think that's the part we're at right now as they're building. But the question is the audience big enough? I mean, because you will say hyperlocal, you can assume that to be everywhere. I mean, that's what hyperlocal always does. They say Patch will say, "Oh my God, we can do everywhere. There could be so many people. They're so interested in this." Yeah. But at the end of the day, is the audience for hyperlocal, because maybe people just want their 10 o'clock news, or they just want the Tribune? Is the audience actually a boutique or that kind of audience?
This is rabbit hole, and we're in the rabbit hole segment, we get to talk about this stuff, right? I mean, the fact of the matter is that DNA did local in a way that nobody else ever had done before, and that's why they've got so many fans who missed them, because they understood that, you know, they always tell the story about, you know, the I don't know what it was, like the crack in the sidewalk that everybody was upset about, or a kind of tree that was... The fact of the matter is they had a sense of humor, and they had a sense of whimsy about what they were doing, and that's what people relate to.
Curiosity,
right?
This whole curiosity
thing. And they're stitching together a bunch of different, very disparate communities, and they have one person who, you know, if they get really talented people, they can handle a whole community.
Well, good luck to them.
And they were doing my neighborhood very well.
Yeah, they did. And that'll be another issue, scope. When you're only talking about five or six reporters, is that going to be something that some neighborhoods will be left out? Ray, let's talk about, I mean, how much we can talk about the Tribune. The LA Times is sold off. Tribune is now not in that game, which there was a lot on Michael Farrow and what that meant for him. But, I mean, what does it mean for Chicago that the LA Times is gone? I mean, because I think a lot of people would probably not even know that the Trib was in that game.
Yeah, I think you're probably right about that. The whole expansion started years and years ago, maybe 15, 20 years ago, when they were thinking, the Tribune, making money, let's make it a big national footprint. That was their buzz term. So they bought this chain that had the LA Times, the Baltimore Sun, a couple of papers in Florida, a couple others elsewhere, and the idea was, hey, you could get a big national buy, and they were coming back to that idea again. They, you know, how things cycle in and cycle out, they were coming back to that idea again, and Pharaoh had the owner, had the majority owner, had basically looked to L.A. as a place that could be expanded into a really big entertainment type of mecca with overseas satellite bureaus, et cetera, et cetera. Well, as you know, there's been all kinds of upheaval in the newsroom there. There's been fights over who should be in charge, et cetera, et cetera. And then a union formed just recently, and shortly thereafter, we're seeing it sold off. And it was not a bad price, frankly. It was sold for the San Diego paper, a few other auxiliary units there, and the L.A. Times sold for $500 million. There was a time here, because of the recession and all of the dire stories about circulation crashes, that you might have thought you might not have been able to get $500 million for the entire chain.
You're going to see a lot on that story because, as pointed out, they got a lot slimmer, and the question is, will we get back into whether or not other companies are going to buy the Tribune? Let's move quickly to the
Sun-Times.
Somebody
pointed out on Twitter today that it sold for $500 million times the amount of money the Sun-Times sold for.
They're moving in a different direction in our arts and culture. Bill Zwecker and Hedy Weiss this week, long time.
Excellent
esteemed
point.
Arts and culture columnists were let go.
Recognizable faces in town.
Yeah, and so what does this mean? I mean, is this a lot of people say, oh, we can't have less arts and culture, but if you listen to Chris Fusco and the Sun-Times, that's not what this is. They're trying to reorganize how they cover arts in the city.
Well, you know, it's the Sears thing, right? It's like Sears has everything, and everybody's got to figure out what they do best and do that, and that's what it is. And that sounds callous. I'm really unhappy about the fact that they were both let go. I think it's a terrible thing, particularly Hedy Weiss, and especially given the politics of what was happening with her and the Steppenwolf Theater and all that.
A whole other story,
I mean, it really does look like, now that there's two of them, maybe it's not. But I mean, originally it really looked like they just let her go because they didn't want to have the fight with the theater community, who were upset about her bad reviews about some African American plays. But nevertheless, I guess the Sun-Times is in a fight for its survival, and it's going to have to figure that out.
I don't ever want to see those columnists, because I like them. I like both of them go. But I am, as a consumer, interested in what they're going to do with that space and that arts and culture space, especially since they are definitely looking to be leaner, meaner, and in some other form than they are now.
Or maybe they won't even have that space.
Or maybe they won't. That'll be a topic of conversation that'll be on this program if that happens.
I do think that would be a mistake, but, you know, maybe
Mark Conkle comes over to run the Reader.
How about that, huh? Former DNA, and now he's
former Sun-Times, won a Pulitzer Prize. Yeah.
So he's back in the Sun-Times fold now because the Sun-Times owns the Reader. Mm-hmm. And what's the first thing he does? He fires Jake Mullooly, who was the editor for a good long time. He's a couple of years, I think. And by my estimation, was doing a really good job.
Yeah.
But, the quote from Mark Conkle is, he wants to make the Reader relevant every day, online, and to make the paper a must-read for Chicagoans again. That's kind of like a nasty thing to say about the former editor, that he wants to make the paper reader.
Yeah.
So there you are.
Well, I mean, I guess I didn't realize. I mean, he comes in as executive editor, and I guess the first move would be to who he wants to be the editor.
Right.
Or Jake Mullooly, another great journalist. He'll land on his feet pretty quick. All right, so let's finish it up here. What do we like for the story that's going to be remembered from this week? 5, 10, 15, 20, 50, 500 years. What do we got, guys? What do you think's going to stick?
Well, I'm not going to say 500. Snowmageddon, of course, will be like 5 minutes. But I do think that the story that we talked about earlier, the J.B. Pritzker on the FBI tapes with Rod Blagojevich, will resonate for at least a decade or more, depending on how
it shakes out.
Yeah.
Well, I was also going to say depending how many times they run a commercial with it in the next 6 months.
Right,
it's going to be crazy how much
it's probably run 15 times since we've been Gonzagan.
Ken, what do you think?
I have two, and you're not going to approve the first one, because I had the North and South Korean hockey players carrying the torch together, and I thought that would be something that would be remembered maybe 10 years from now.
I didn't realize how much people thought that this was all political ploy stuff.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, that's a different topic, but yeah. I didn't realize that was. I heard the NBC guys talking about that last night.
It was kind of a tearjerker, and yeah. And you know, anyway. But the real one, obviously, is Starman yeah. in the Tesla.
That's
in the Tesla.
Yeah.
I mean, that really will be around 100 years from now. The thing is going to come back to Earth in 11 years. It's going to circle around Mars.
So fun. And I have to say, I mean, you know, there hasn't been too many exciting moments when it comes to space exploration.
No.
We saw two of them this week. The Falcon heavy launch was huge.
Was
I mean, that was huge. And watching how the rockets came back down.
Oh,
and
watching the two
so
of
great.
Them, that synchronized
and,
landing.
And in a way, overshadowed what was at the beginning of the week, the selfie from Mars, that the rovers are still there, which is amazing. But the selfie of an amazing shot that really, truly went viral
yeah.
again, where
yeah.
you're like, oh, yeah, we're on Mars already. Take yeah. a look at this. This is Google Street View.
You know what I was thinking, though? Isn't there some kind of international treaty about what you can shoot into space?
Yeah.
Sending space junk up? I mean, it is space junk.
It's audacious.
Yeah,
at some
it's
point,
pretty weird.
I feel it to be obnoxious.
And
like if I were an alien, and I'd be like, this is human.
Yeah, this is what you're sending.
This is what you're sending.
Yeah. Yeah. And
maybe they
one,
won't come close then. You know, they see this.
They'll keep them away.
Yeah, right,
we're not going
current.
There.
Right.
But there's one other little thing about it, which is that lost in all of this is the fact that it didn't make the orbit that it was
yeah,
supposed to make into around Mars. So let's just suppose that that craft had like five living human beings in
oh.
it.
Mm.
And it was like, oh, yeah, yeah, we overshot the rocket. So it's going to spend
yeah,
the next
right.
5 million years in the asteroid one, belt
so.
Or wherever.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. You're
be a good movie,
so
though,
it
right?
wasn't that great.
Well, great way to end it. Ken Davis, Chicago Newsroom. You can find it on CanTV. It airs all the time. You can find it at chicagonewsroom.org. Of course, Ray, I can't thank you enough. Ray Long, investigative reporter at the Chicago Tribune. Great reporter who came in tonight to pinch hit. We appreciate it.
Good to be here.
Thanks, guys. Great stuff.
Thanks.